Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on ginger and why it could save your life. Also, genetically modified toxins, we should be concerned, doubly concerned, because we're finding them in virtually all pregnant women and their fetuses. That's bad. And then we're going to look at the human papillomavirus. We've been told that the way to prevent this, kill it, prevent malignancies of the cervical area, is to get the Gardasil vaccine. I will share with you today, from the original scientific literature, the Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Sciences, University of British Columbia, the latest report as published on this. You'll be surprised. Also, how many people as a percentage are severely, morbidly obese in the United States? This is a horror story. I'll share it with you. From our issue segment, shocking report explodes five myths about American education. From Les Leopold, from Alternet, I'll share that. Facts about America's decaying infrastructure and what we can do about it. Greenpeace is speaking out about gas hydrofracking in New York and the risk to your clean drinking water. And also from our commentary today, deprived by our current standard of living, kids are not getting into nature, but they are getting into television, and that's not good. Common Dreams will share that. From our environmental segment today, mercury, thimerosal, a new study. I went to the original scientific literature, toxicological and environmental chemistry, maternal transfer of mercury to developing embryo and fetus. Is there a safe level? From Dr. Aya Brown and David Austin. Why are these studies I'm citing from the original reports? A, because they're independent research. They're not funded by someone who has a vested interest in the outcome. And B, the mainstream media is not telling you about this. We will. Let's begin. We have a lot to share today. I've decided not to have a guest today so that we can have more time for you to call in on the callback segment. One of nature's most brilliant food products is ginger. I grow ginger. Ginger can grow 15 feet high, and it blossoms with a white flower at night. It has a nice aromatic quality. But it's not that part of the ginger. It's the root where you get the, from anywhere from 4 to 6, 7 inches of the actual ginger root. And that's what's very tasty, but it's medicinal. Here's one more reason why we should pay attention to ginger. This is a journal of biomedicine and biotechnology. They found, quote, ginger may be a promising candidate for the treatment of breast carcinomas, end quote. Well, that's important. Ginger can selectively kill breast cancer cells, but of course there's no side effect and doesn't hurt any of the healthy cells. So that's the latest research published in a peer-reviewed journal. Now, they shouldn't stop there, because here's other research. Over 1,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature on ginger. We know that it not only has anti-cancer activity, but it can also induce programmed cell death. It downgrades post-survival genes, NFKB, and that allows you to live longer. It is extremely important to help prevent colorectal cancer, liver cancer, lung cancer, melanoma, pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, and skin cancer. Quite simply, it is the prototype of a food medicine, meaning a food that acts in a functional way as a medicine. It also helps relieve nausea. That's why you have ginger ale, and pain. But it's also wonderful in seasoning of our food, which has been done throughout the world for a long time. So There's 100 unique and specific health benefits to using ginger. It's been used for thousands of years. So my suggestion is start including it. Now, let's say you want to reduce pain or you have breast cancer. Then, first of all, get yourself into the hands of a holistic oncologist or physician or nurse who can direct you on how best to consume different anti-cancer agents and immune-stimulating agents. I would have someone drinking ginger. I would juice it. That releases the most amount of its bioactive components. For a simple reason, ginger is a very, very tough oligocellulose. It's almost like trying to digest wood. So unless you grate it or squeeze the juice out of it, you're not going to get very much of a percentage of its whole healing benefit. But when you juice it, you get 100% of its healing benefit. So I would juice about 6 inches at a time. Generally, it's about anywhere from a half to an inch across. I would balance that out with apple, preferably green apple, and cucumber. And that's one good way to get ginger in your body every day. As a great detox, help you with nausea, help you with cancer, help you with bacteria and yeast overgrowth in the intestine. Many of you are aware that right now on Gary Nall TV, there is a documentary. It's there free for the public to watch. It's my gift as a public service. I put it up there a little over 2.5 months ago after premiering it in New York. We were sold out at the Ethical Culture Center, 1,000 people. Then out in the Huntington Arts Cinema downtown at the City. I've forgotten the name of it. And then up in Woodstock at the Woodstock Community Center, which I am told and was told by the director that night that it's the largest outpouring of people for any event. I had to do an impromptu lecture outside because hundreds of people cooking in. So while they were standing and sitting on the floor and chairs watching it inside, I was outside lecturing. I'll be going back up there in about another 2 months and to premiere a new film, and I'm going to premiere a new one in New York also, but I won't mention anything about that right this moment. In any case, this film was about the FDA. And the FDA is the agency responsible for determining if anything that we're consuming as a food or a beverage is safe or not. The trouble is, long ago, the FDA, at the policy-making level, abrogated its responsibility to political influence and financial dealing. As a result, one person who is from the pharmaceutical industry after another comes in to run the FDA and then goes back to the industry. And they allowed genetically modified foods to get into the food supply by claiming that they're virtually the same as regular or organic food. They're not. So I just exposed the whole, you know, fetid corrupt background of the FDA in this film. The very day that I said you can now watch it for free, 2,150,000 people went up to watch it in a 12-hour period. How many have watched it since then? I do not know. I'm trying to get some statistics on it. I've heard anywhere from 17 to 23 million people, and that's without the people who send it to other people. And we know that other people have seen it because they had other people send it from other sites. So it could be tens of millions of people who've seen it. And it's giving the people more honest understanding of a massive, malignant bureaucracy. Now, anyone who listens to this program know I'm absolutely supportive of any local, state, or federal bureaucracy that supports the common needs of the people, the taxpayers, and does so with a gentle hand and ideally with complete transparency and input from the citizens. I am absolutely opposed to all bureaucracies that are corrupt, that serve no vital function, that are only self-serving, that continue to expand, and that give us nothing, and sometimes worse than nothing, like the Nuclear Regulatory Agency and the Food and Drug Administration and the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Bureau of Land Management and all these others. They are terribly corrupt at every level, and we should abolish them all and start from scratch and ask, what did that purpose they serve? Well, if we want to know whether the foods and drugs and beverages we consume is safe, then get independent toxicologists and independent experts who are not going to be biased by income or stock or lecture or honorariums or research fees. Let them tell us. So we could have done for 1/100th the cost. We could save $500 billion a year if we got rid of bad government and replaced it with people's government. But neither side is willing to do it because they both benefit at the corporate level from that. So for those of you who have not watched the film, please do so and pass it on to the people. It's free. It's called The War on Health. And you go to Gary Noll TV and you can download it. Here is the latest reason why I'm opposed to the FDA at every level and why I'm opposed to genetically modified organisms. Any of them. All of them. Quote from Heidi Stevenson from Green Med Info. GMOs, toxins, are in nearly all pregnant women and fetuses. The GMO mass experiment on the public is producing results, terrifying ones. GM toxic elements can be found in nearly all pregnant women and children. The toxins designed into genetically modified crops are finding their way into the bloodstreams of all pregnant women and their fetuses. This shocking result belies the genetic modification industry's claims that such toxins are destroyed by the digestive tracts of people who eat the animals fed these GMO crops. Those claims are based upon lies. It is not true. The study, maternal and fetal exposure to pesticides associated with genetically modified foods in eastern townships of Quebec, end quote, was published in the peer-reviewed journal Reproductive Toxicology. The author, Aris and LeBlanc, examined the blood of 30 pregnant women and 39 non-pregnant women. All births associated with the study were considered normal. Babies at normal birth weights and considered healthy. The authors looked for glyphosate, brand name Roundup, pesticide. They look for AMPA, the form of aminomethylphosphoric acid, and metabolite of glyphosate. They looked for 3-MMPA, metabolite, and also a BT toxin. Interesting that these were found in large percentages in non-pregnant women, but neither was found in pregnant women or the fetuses. Obviously, a metabolic change occurs when a woman becomes pregnant. One might have hoped that that would be adequate to prevent the toxic effects of GMO feed crops. Unfortunately, it appears that the opposite occurs with corn, though no toxins from glyphosate were found. The BT genetically modified toxins were found in 100% every single fetus in their maternal fetal cord. And another toxin was found in 80%. And then it goes on here to describe what this means. So at the very least, at this moment, we can say that because of the reckless disregard for public health, because of the enormous power and profit of the genetically modified companies and the people like the first president, George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton in particular, he's out there for anyone. And you wave money, and boy, those politicians just smile. And then you get into power, and then you change the laws. Then you get your own employees to come in, like Michael Taylor from Monsanto, and run the food safety of the whole FDA. He's the most powerful single person in America when it comes to food. And he is a lawyer from Monsanto. How does that happen? Because you open the doors for those that are going to think well and do well for you. That's what Washington is. Now, we're heard right now on Washington on our sister station, WPFW, where I've been for 28 years. Every day, Monday to Friday, 3 to 4 p.m. We have a lot of people who work in the agencies of government who listen to this program who are very conscientious, very dedicated, very honest, very ethical, very moral. And they're outraged by what they see. Because as one person told me when I was in Washington recently, it used to be that you could see some influence by special interest groups, corporations, but it took a long time. Now it's rampant. The doors are kicked open, and major corporations are just literally doing anything and everything they want by controlling all of our regulatory agencies. As a result, they are not going to see that anything is done, any law is put in place, or any regulation that would in any way adversely affect them. And that's the case. So just be aware, genetically modified foods are not good. We should not have them. And those of us who care do not buy genetically modified organisms and food. We buy organic. But what if you go to the big health food, $12 billion a year, monolithic health food store, Whole Foods? Now, I'm assuming if you've gone in there, you know, they have a lot of different merchandise. You go in because a health food store is supposed to provide foods that are really a different type of food. Well, listen to an undercover investigation that went into Whole Foods, a bunch of them, to find out if they're really organic. Are they really opposed to GMOs? Are they opposing the current legislation or supporting the current legislation in California that would have all GMO foods labeled? That's what we're for, labeling. And that's why I've done a documentary that's being distributed all over California to grassroots organizations, 200 just yesterday alone, to try to fight so the consumers can say, yes, we're a whole group of people. There are lots of people, Gretchen DeBow and a whole lot of different organizations working together to get the vote out to say, yes, we want our food labeled. Monsanto, DuPont are putting up to $35 to $40 million into getting the people convinced, no, there's no difference. Oh, yeah, there is. And you'll see it. But now let's listen to the conclusions of an investigation into the supermarket Whole Foods and ask yourself, is that the type of store you want to shop in?
Over the past 3 months, the Organic Spies recorded hidden camera footage of 30 employees at 12 Whole Foods stores in Los Angeles, California, to investigate intentional false marketing by Whole Foods. They train employees to tell customers they do not sell genetically engineered foods, even though 20 to 30% of their products contain GMOs.
It's against our policy to carry anything that's grown with GMOs.
If these have GMOs, I just want to avoid it.
Yeah.
So.
Not to my understanding.
Okay.
If they did, we wouldn't be carrying them.
Okay.
In 2009, Whole Foods became the first nationally certified organic grocer when they were certified organic by CCOF. This led to deceptive marketing that causes many people to believe everything at Whole Foods is organic and chemical-free. Whole Foods heavily advertises this and uses other masterful greenwashing tactics to brand themselves as a local organic retailer so people believe everything in their store is healthy.
Whole Foods Market's favorite dishes start with locally grown organic produce.
The reality is, 20 to 30% of Whole Foods products contain GMO ingredients, depending on each store or region. Genetically engineered foods are everywhere, in the salad bar, packaged foods, meats, and dairy products, yet we are not informed of each product because there are hundreds of genetically engineered ingredients. Even the Whole Foods branded vitamin line may contain GMOs. On the Whole Foods website, they instruct people how to avoid GMOs at their stores by buying certified organic products, non-GMO Project Seal, or Whole Foods 365 brand. No other information is available for people to guarantee they are avoiding GMOs. Whole Foods has mastered the art of bait and switch, advertising local and organic in all of their marketing and PR, getting people into their stores and then selling them lower cost, naturally labeled GMO products that result in higher profit margins for Whole Foods. This bait and switch practice has turned Whole Foods into a financial juggernaut. Whole Foods for the year ending September 25th, 2011, had $10.107 billion in sales. We estimate $2 to $3 billion of that comes from selling products containing GMO ingredients. On November 6th, California could become the first state to require labeling of genetically engineered foods. GMO foods are currently labeled in 49 countries, including China, Russia, and the entire European Union. Monsanto, Dow, DuPont, and multinational food companies are fighting to defeat Prop 37 and have spent $32,439,000. The financial supporters of Prop 37 who are demanding GMO labeling and our right to know have spent $3,861,000. All the donations to support Prop 37 are from independent or family-owned or 100% organic businesses and grassroots nonprofits. Not one donation in support of Prop 37 is from a multinational food company or any of their organic brands. These multinational food companies falsely advertise their organic brands as independent, value-driven businesses and do not put the logo of the parent company on their products. A nationwide boycott of these organic brands has begun because profits from their sales go to donating millions of dollars to oppose Prop 37. Pepsi, Naked Juice, $1,716,300. Kellogg, Kashi, Bare Naked, Garden Burger, Morningstar Farms, $632,500. Coca-Cola, Odwalla, Honest Tea, $1,164,400. Hershey, Dagoba, $395,100. General Mills, Cascadian Farms, Muir Glen, Larabar, $520,000. Smucker's, Santa Cruz Organic, R.W. Knudsen, After the Fall, $387,000. Dean Foods, Horizon Organic, White Wave, Silk, $253,000. The main financial supporters of Prop 37 are Dr. Joseph Mercola, $1,100,000. Organic Consumers Fund, $730,000. Nature's Path, $600,000. Dr. Bronner's, $290,000. Lundberg Family Farms, $250,000. The nonprofits leading Prop 37 are Labeled GMOs, Organic Consumers Association, and Food Democracy Now. A total of 33 companies have donated to support Prop 37.
And there are also thousands of individuals at the grassroots level who have contributed their time as well. And we thank all those individuals for joining in this effort. Unfortunately, you will not see the vitamin companies, you will not see the health food stores as a group who are contributing to fight this. That's unfortunate. You would think that that would be the case. It is not. Every health food store should have posters up and flyers out to inform their population that shops there, their customers, of why organic is better than GMOs, and we should label GMOs. That's what we're trying to do. I'll keep you in the loop. And we are trying to get at least 20 million people to watch segments of the film prior to the election. And when you see the footage we have, it's just incredible. We have massive tumors that were produced in mammary glands. That would be your breast glands in mice and renal failure and renal cancer carcinomas in mice. That would be your liver. That's what we're showing. After 3 months, the game is that the GMO companies stop all their research in 90 days. But the cancers come after 90 days. So look at how smart they are. Look at the manipulation. They'll say, well, we didn't see any cancers in our feeding trial, and, you know, it went on 90 days. End of story. Along come the scientist in France and say, we did a 2-year study and our tumors didn't show up until after 90 days. And then they just went crazy with tumors. And here's how big the tumors are. One of the scientists quoted, and you'll see the film footage later that we have from France, says, you don't see cancers grow this fast and this large. And then you see a cancer that's larger than the rat. That with some genetically modified foods. And yet none of this does the FDA take into account because the FDA is corrupt at every level. Just need you to know that. So you have to start speaking out, and hopefully you will. Now on to other issues. Another issue I believe we should all be concerned about is the lack of safety and efficacy in our vaccines. Sometime in the next 9 months, I will have completed my fourth film on vaccination. This fourth film is, without question, the most powerful because I only ask one question at the introduction of the film. Are vaccines safe? If so, what's the proof? And are vaccines effective? If so, what is the proof? I then interviewed 74 leading women physicians and scientists, from the leading toxicologist at Brown University and Harvard and other schools, and to a person, they brought forth evidence that they can be proven neither safe nor effective for any given individual. Well, then that led me to ask two additional questions. If they're not safe, what is the proof? And if they're not effective, what is the proof? And then that's where it really gets scary. And then you start seeing how we've been lied to. But be that as it may, here is the latest. And ALEC and its pharmaceutical partners have been meeting with state legislators to try to get mandatory vaccinations, especially the flu shot, which is a worthless piece of crap. And if you want to read why, in a scholarly paper, go to GaryNall.com. We have over 23 articles there that we have submitted on the flu vaccine, the H1N1, and other aspects of vaccination. But the big one right now is the Gardasil vaccine. I consider the Gardasil vaccine a complete and total fraud. I consider the doctors using it as engaging in crimes against humanity. I believe everyone involved in this in time should be brought to trial. I believe that this is a form of madness. And I'm ashamed of our medical establishment. And there's no shame for our journalists, because they're just pimping for their advertisers constantly. Here is from a scientific journal. This is called, the article is entitled, and it's from the Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Sciences, University of British Columbia, Human Papillomavirus Vaccines as an Option for Preventing Cervical Malignancies, How Effective and Safe. By the authors of this are Dr. Tom Genovic and Shaw and Spinoza. Quote, we carried out a systematic review of human papillomavirus vaccine pre- and post-licensure trials to assess the evidence of their effectiveness and safety. We find that the human papillomavirus vaccine clinical trials design and data interpretation of both efficacy and safety outcomes were largely inadequate. Additionally, we note evidence of selective reporting of results from clinical trials, including exclusion of vaccine efficacy figures related to study subgroups in which efficacy might be lower or even negative from peer-reviewed publications. Given this, the widespread optimism regarding human papillomavirus vaccines' long-term benefits appears to rest on a number of unproven assumptions, or such which are at odds with factual evidence, and significant misinterpretations of available data. For example, the claim that human papillomavirus vaccination will result in approximately 70% reduction of cervical cancers is made despite the fact that the clinical trials data have not demonstrated to date that the vaccines have actually prevented a single case of cervical cancer, let alone cervical cancer death. Zero. Nor that the current overly optimistic surrogate marker-based extrapolations are justified. Likewise, the notion that human papillomavirus vaccines have an impressive safety profile is only supported by highly flawed design of safety trials and is contrary to accumulating evidence from vaccine safety surveillance databases and case reports which continue to link human papillomavirus vaccination to serious adverse outcomes, including death and permanent disabilities. We thus conclude that further reduction of cervical cancers might best be achieved by optimizing cervical screening, that means a pap smear, which carries no risks, and targeting other factors of the disease rather than the reliance on vaccines with questionable efficacy and safety profiles, end quote. Have you read that? Heard about it anywhere? Not at all. So in America today, if you have a toxic, deadly, killing drug, you're going to make a lot of money. If you ever do have to settle lawsuits, it'll be a month's profit, no big deal. Your stock will go up. That's what happens. The media, it'll never challenge you because they want the money for the advertising. The scientific community, they want the money from the from the research grants that you give and the lectures and the continuing education special vacations and all the other perks that come for going along to get along. But what about the people who actually got the vaccines, the human vaccines? I just finished filming a whole group of parents whose daughters are dead. And not a single politician. Well, why should we expect any of these politicians? They're the lowest form of human behavior. And we all know it. We're just afraid to say it. Well, I'm not afraid to say it. I think they're human scum. I think every single politician, without any exception, every single politician, throw their worthless asses out of office. How about that? Can't get us up to do that? Well, at least know what we're dealing with. But then talk with a mother who's no longer got a daughter who's 16 years old because after her third vaccine with Gardasil, she became paralyzed and died. Here's one. We thank Eileen Daneman, director of the National Coalition of Organized Women, for her report. Quote, it's short. He noted that the records indicated that Ms. Murrah's illness progressed from a demyelinating disorder that began 4 days after she received the vaccination and progressed from her distal extremities to her spinal cord and brain. This disorder made Ms. Murrah's comatose, quadriplegic, incontinent, where urine and feces were passed without control, and she required mechanical ventilation, rendering her intellectually handicapped. The undersigned finds petitioner, Ms. Murrah, has established by predominant evidence that she is entitled to compensation. Accordingly, the undersigned finds that petitioner is entitled to compensation. 21 years old. She got a flu shot. Just a flu shot. And now she's a vegetable. How many get flu shots, get sick, have a compromised immune system, and don't get compensated, and nobody knows the better? I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to go to your calls in just a moment, but now to our issues segment. As a teacher, someone who cares deeply about using the relationship between a learner, I don't call them students, I call them learners, and a facilitator, you're exchanging ideas, inspiration, motivation, so that the person will understand how to look at life as it really is and look for ways to resolve crises and problems before they happen or when they're happening. Give them the tools to function in the real world. Don't just test them so that they get good grades. That's meaningless in the real world. A new international report, according to Alternate Liz Leopold, demolishes several deeply held myths. And every time I'm driving someplace to a film shoot and I have the radio on and I want to hear what Rush Limbaugh is saying, I want to see how he's handling these issues, Mark Levin and these other people, and on the left and right. But most of the time around America, I can't get anything on the left. I get it on the right. Everywhere you go, you find a conservative station. So when they say the liberal media bias, boy, have they played that myth. It's really conservative bias. In any case, there are all these myths about our educational system. And the one who uncovered these was the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development in a report. And what they did is they simply compared the United States' complete educational system to 30 other developed nations. And so when it comes to education, we're, what, number one? That's what we've been led to believe. American exceptionalism. No, we're not number one. We're just about dead last. Myth. Our educational system provides more upward mobility than any other in the world. No. It's practically a sacred oath to proclaim that we lead the world in upward mobility. America, we're told, and ad nauseum, is the best place on earth for a poor person to improve his or her station in life. You might struggle for one generation or so, but your kids can make it up the ladder faster than anywhere else in the world. And the reason, of course, is because we provide the best educational opportunities for all young people, rich and poor. The problem is it's a myth. It's just not true. Quote, "The odds that a young person in the United States will be in a higher education if his or her parents do not have an upper secondary education are just 29%, one of the lowest levels among all 30 developed countries in the world," end quote. Well, just how bad is it? Well, of 30 countries, we're 28th. Worst. Myth number two. Our teachers are protected by their greedy unions, and they work less, and they get paid more. What bums? No, it's a lie. Look, it's been open season on public employees, especially teachers and their unions. We're told they get paid too much. Their benefits are too high. They get tenure, while the rest of us fear layoffs. And they're a bunch of lazy louts that get their entire summer off. If there's educational decline, then teachers must be the cause, right? Wrong. When the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development presented the reports, it says here, quote, "Teachers in the United States between up to 1,100 hours a year teaching, more than most other places in the world, much more than any other place in the world," end quote. Of the 38 countries surveyed, only two countries had teachers who worked more hours, Argentina and Chile. And when it comes to hours work per years by our primary school teachers, we're number one. So let's be very clear. American school teachers put in more hours at work than any other place on the planet. But surely aren't these unionized teachers making just too much money? No, again. Quote, "Despite high overall levels of spending on education, teacher salaries in the United States compare poorly. While in most of the 30 developed countries, teacher salaries tend to be lower on average than the salaries earned by other workers with higher education in the United States, the difference is large, especially for teachers with minimal qualifications," end quote. Just two more here. Big government, via our tax dollars, funds higher education. In state after state, politicians are taking an axe to higher education budgets as we plow more money into our prison system. We no longer can afford our lavish public colleges and universities, and so that's what we're told. But overall, don't we still lead the world in big government support for higher education? Well, we almost lead the world in overall spending on higher education, but in absolute dollars and as a percentage of gross domestic product, unfortunately, we place more of the burden on students and their families than just about any other developed nation. Quote, "In the United States, 38% of higher education expenditures come from public sources and 62%, that's 62% are from private sources, out-of-pocket savings. All across the country, 70% of expenditures on the other 29 countries, 70% is paid from public sources. 30% from private. So we pay more than twice as much of our own savings for education. Little wonder we have a $1 trillion student loan industry that serves as an ever-present lobby to make sure the debt burden remains with students and their families. And finally, we provide excellent early childhood education. Worried about creeping socialism? You hear it all the time, right? Look no further than Head Start and other preschool programs we throw money at. Isn't this where the nanny state begins? Blinded by anti-government ideology, we face the notice that the rest of the world invests much more in their young people, especially their very young. Quote, "On average, across all 30 countries, 84% of pupils in early childhood education attend programs in public schools or government-dependent private institutions, while the United States, it's not 84%, it's 55% of early childhood pupils attend programs in public schools, and 45% attend independent private programs. In the United States, the typical starting age for early childhood education is 4. While in 21 other countries, it's 3 or younger. Even more telling is the fact that we tend not to employ professional educators and for our very young. As the report delegate puts it, quote, in addition, education-only early childhood programs in other countries are usually delivered by a qualified teacher and have a formal curriculum. While in the United States, the situation can vary substantially. Vary indeed it does. I might mention one of my own pet peeves. We keep hearing that we have the highest percentage of college grads in the world. Okay, we may have some issues with early childhood education. Who pays for college, upward mobility, and public support for public education? But as politicians tell us, we're going to win the global competition for knowledge-based industries and jobs precisely because we have the best universities and most college graduates. And while it's difficult to compare global colleges and universities, it is possible to compare the number of college graduates among developed nations. Again, we suffer by comparison. Quote, the United States ranks 14th in the world in the percentage of 25 to 34-year-olds with higher education. So once again, we're dealing with myths. I'm Gary Null. Your time to talk back, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. One last thing before we go to our break from our environmental segment today. Most of you probably have several fillings, and if you do, you have mercury, thimerosal mercury, or methyl mercury, in your mouth. That mercury, we were told, for over 100 years is safe. It's locked. Now we know it's not. Every time you chew, every time you talk, every time you drink, mercury is being released and going into your body. From the peer-reviewed journal Toxicological and Environmental Chemistry, article entitled, Maternal Transfer of Mercury in the Developing Embryos and Fetus, Is There a Safe Level? From Dr. Brown in Austin, quote, mercury exposure is ubiquitous in modern society via vaccines, fish, crustacea, dental amalgam, food, water, and atmosphere. This article examines the mercury exposure in the context of primary exposure to pregnant women and secondary exposure experienced by their unborn babies. Babies in utero are particularly at risk of high mercury exposure, higher than adults on a dose basis, and are more susceptible to adverse effects from mercury and its biologically active compounds. It is therefore critical that regulatory advisories around the United States maximize safe mercury exposure, account for pregnant women and secondary exposure that the children in utero experience. This study focused on standardized embryonic and fetal mercury exposure, primary exposure in pregnant women, and two common mercury sources, dietary fish and vaccines. Quote, listen carefully. Data demonstrate that mercury exposure, particularly during the first trimester of pregnancy, at well-established dose-weight ratios, produce severe damage to humans, including death. Let me report this again. Produce severe damage to humans, including death. In light of research suggestive of a mercury risk factor for childhood conditions such as tic disorder, cerebral palsy, and autism, it is essential that mercury advisories account for secondary prenatal human exposures, end quote. Once again, have you heard about this, seen it, read it anywhere? So what have I said for a long time? I've said before you contemplate a planned pregnancy, go through a 1 to 2 year detoxification, get rid of the mercury filling, get all the fish out of your diet, go vegan, be healthy, detox, chelate, because it's all going to end up in your baby if you don't. And that can kill your baby. 1 in 3 births ends in miscarriage. That's an awful lot of babies that we're killing every year because of not knowing the dangers of a body load of toxins. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Hey, you.
Come out here on the floor. Let's rock some more. Come out of here on the floor. Now when you get out here, don't you have no fear. Put your hands on your hip and let your backbone slip and work out. Ah, my mama moved up.
First step.
Honey moved back.
Second step.
Shuffle to the left.
Third step.
Wobble to the right.
I'd like to welcome all of you to this program. I'm Gary Noll. Let's say hello to Carolyn from Manhattan. Hi, Carolyn. Your turn.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm a little nervous, but I wanted to call in. My name's Karen, actually. Calling you, thanks for all your wonderful work over the past many decades. I've been listening to you, Gary. I see the GMO problem as a complex of problems, and that the narrow edge of the wedge in the fight against them is this FDA or Food and Drug Administration fight. There are some, and myself, I'm included, who are slightly skeptical. Skeptical means questioning, not, you know, not arguing against, but questioning this business of tumors and all of that. And for those who, like me, are skeptical, there are so many more reasons to urge your friends in California to vote for labeling of GMOs. And I'd just like to share a couple of them, if I may.
Sure. Please do.
Okay. Well, first of all, we have to know that GMO crops have sprung up and some have taken over their agricultural sectors in less than 20 years. And this has been buoyed by the absence of public awareness due to the absence of labeling. The federal government, I believe, is poorly structured to address the complex of problems that is biotech agriculture today. That complex covers areas about food, agriculture, biodiversity, property rights, ethics, and patent law. And this complex of problems, each of which is addressed by a different agency in the federal government, flows in part from the mass-scale incursion of biotech proponents into our universities, because biology is now, biotech is the new biology, industries, and governmental agencies and of biotech products into our seed banks, onto massive tracts of land beyond its intended bounds, into the food stream of countless wild species, as well as intentionally into livestock and humans, and from there, who knows. So if we can just get this proposition voted for, we can increase awareness of all the other problems that biotech and biotech monoagriculture pose. I haven't seen your film. I'm sure it must point
all
to...
All of these are addressed. You will see the film very shortly. Those in California are seeing it in chapters immediately. They started seeing it a couple weeks ago. We'll have about 8 chapters, each 15 minutes, plus backup articles, over 150 articles. We're throwing everything we can into this fight. And if we win in California, it'll be because of thousands of people at the grassroots level, and many people at a professional level, like Dr. Joseph Marcola, and I commend him for his commitment on this. He's one of the people I went out to film in San Francisco a few weeks ago. It's because of everyone working together. And if we win in California, we can do the same thing in every one of the other states. Thank you very much. I appreciate your input. Scott from North Carolina. Hi, Scott. Your turn.
How are you doing, man?
Great. Thank you.
Just a statement with regards to, I feel chemtrails are polluting our air. Fluoride is polluting our water. And as you just addressed, GMOs contaminating our food. How do you see the best and most effective way to address all of these destructive issues for our future, and what can be done at the grassroots level in order to raise the level of a consciousness for all of us?
Good questions. Thank you. I see that personal responsibility is the first step. I can put a water filter on my water and stop the fluoride from getting into my body. That I do. I can buy organic. That prevents the genetically modified organisms, which will mutate your cells, according to Dr. Bruce Lipton. And so I only eat organic, and you could too. And you can go to the farmer's market and food co-ops and buy quality, locally grown stuff, which also lowers your carbon footprint. I did a special a few weeks ago on chemtrails, a whole special on the Progressive Commentary Hour. That's the most downloaded radio program in the United States, of any show, of any program, commercial or non-commercial. So go to our website, download the Progressive Commentary Hour on chemtrails. It'll explain it, why we had the top people in the United States on chemtrails on there, what they are, what their impact is, why they're doing what they're doing, what we can do about it. Because there, the public has to see the consequences, that it's not some, you know, kooky conspiracy theory. It's real. It's real. And we can prove it from whistleblowers who are part of it, who are now speaking. And the larger issue is, right now there are, I'm going to guess 10% of the American population are around 31 million people who are very committed to social action, independent voting, third candidate voting, moving back to the land, or having at least shared communities, bartering, getting off the economic grid and political grid, and supporting change that's local and sustainable. It's a massive movement. I'm doing that as we speak. I'm building a veterans village to help homeless and post-traumatic stress Gulf War veterans to live and get their life back over a period of a year with their families. If I can do it and prove it and document it and have it professionally done, then that can motivate others in all communities around the United States to do the same. We look for the banister who breaks a four-minute mile when everyone said it couldn't be done. All the experts said it couldn't be done, and then he did it. And then quickly thereafter, a whole bunch of other people did it. What were they waiting for it to be done? I believe that we're going to see more of this being done by people who are motivated to give up some of their jobs or change their careers or move to different locations and have a better quality of life and then be a beacon for others who want to follow them. That's what I see coming. Thanks a lot, Scott, from North Carolina. Appreciate the input. Let me also mention that watch the film on the FDA. The FDA is the sanctifying and protecting agency for a lot that's wrong. The bad drugs, the bad GMOs, the irradiation of our food, all that comes through the FDA. It's free. It's a public service. It's a hard-hitting documentary. Go to Gary Nall TV and download it. Watch it and then share it with everyone you can. This is people power. This yet they can't affect, but they're trying. Mark my words, within 2 years from today, they will have banned any material that's of a controversial or challenging or an investigative nature getting on the internet anywhere. They'll have to clear everything. Mark my words. And the average person won't care. But for the rest of us who do care about our lives and the world we live in, we'll do all we can to keep as much information to empower people before that happens from happening. Also, by the way, just anyone who has any of the dance videos of our parties over the year, I think about 50 parties, please send them. Thank you for the first two. They're up on the website. If you go to Gary Nall TV, you can see two. They're amateurishly shot, but they're fun. And just to show you what it was like 25, 28 years ago when we all got together for a dance party without alcohol, without drugs, without smoking, just sharing good energy. It's up there, so watch the dance film. You'll like them. They're a lot of fun. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here from Maria. She doesn't say where she's from, but she says, I'm a graduate student in economics. And she says, my gut tells me that you're right and that the market is going to have to correct itself. There's going to be a correction. And yet, all the indicators show that the sky's the limit and people are getting encouraged to get back into the market. She says, could you give me more clarification as why you're telling people to sell?
I don't tell people to sell or not sell. I simply want people to know that the entire basis of the stock market, with 72% of all the trades are algorithm, they happen every millisecond, with the big people getting out of the market now. Your big people are getting out of stock. Why? Simple reason. When the Federal Reserve begins to print $40 billion a month and take back all the toxic mortgages from all the lending institutions, in effect giving them clean money, at no interest, taking away their bad debt and destroying it, that is so manipulating all of the value of our currency, plus it's diluting the currency. They've given out, all told, over $20 trillion. They have nothing in the world to back that up. So, when corporations see that the Fed is willing to keep the interest rate low at zero and willing to give trillions of dollars to major corporations, it then means those corporations have the money to buy up competition, to speculate, to do what we call casino capitalism. But what about the companies that actually are having to run a business? Some are going to do well. Most are not, for simple reasons. 70% of our gross domestic product is based upon public spending. That means 7 out of every $10 is coming from people. All right, now break it down into two areas. First, who were the biggest single spenders in the last 40 years? Baby boomers. And what were they spending on? Homes and upgrading homes and changing homes. There's no one to buy these homes today. The younger generation, 55% of college graduates, are underpaid, unpaid, living at home, and destitute. And they have $1 trillion in debt to the government or to banks. So they're not going to be buying homes. And that means that every industry that is a part of the housing industry is adversely affected. From those who make ceramic towels to bathtubs to toilet seats to faucets to shingles, windows, wood, all that's affected. Then you're not going to have the land speculators. You also won't have the sprawl in urban development. To the contrary, not only has the urban development not spread, it is constricting with massive 11 million homes foreclosed on, many of them in suburbs. That brings down the value of all the other property, and suddenly the local communities no longer have the tax base to keep up the revenue stream that would allow them to provide the essential services. So when you can't pick up the garbage, and when you don't fix the broken lights, and when the neighborhoods are no longer policed on a regular basis, then they become ghettos. And so we're seeing the ghettoization of the suburbs, where we've seen the ghettoization of the urban areas for a long time. Ask any New Yorker, hey, whose street gets plowed first, Fifth Avenue or a street in Queens, 23rd Avenue? You know, you could wait 3 weeks before someone comes down your street in Queens because you're not important. But in Manhattan on Fifth Avenue, you're considered important. That's the reality. So where most of the industries are going to constrict, you're going to start seeing inflation in food, but also you're going to have up to as much as an 80% correction you could have in the market. That would be the worst case scenario. But easily you could have a 40% correction. 40% drop in value of stocks.
Oh my God.
That's entirely possible because there's nothing holding them up. They're all artificially inflated. All of them. So if you allowed a stock to go to the actual level of its economic support, probably 80% of the stocks would drop by 50%. So that's why I believe it's much better to get out of... I wouldn't own a stock. I own no stocks. Get out of stocks, get out of banking, and put your money into silver, gold, and currency. Currency is going to be hit because when the Fed's impact happens... Let me use an example, for example. When money passes through the reserves and hits the markets, inflation will surge. Once you have, let's say, an 8% inflation, a 10-year treasury bond loses over half of its value. And by the time you get 25%, you've lost virtually everything. Then where do you think interest rates are going to go? 10%? 15%? Who's going to buy anything when you got to pay astronomical interest and then compounding fees on top of that? That's going to create an enormous gridlock in the market and an economic collapse of our system. I wish it weren't that way, but companies are not stupid. Do you think all these companies are out there borrowing? Do you think they're going to continue to borrowing when the cost of borrowing is going to exceed the profit brought in from their sales? No. All those companies are over-leveraged with enormous debt when the interest rates goes up, and they have to start paying that. Servicing their debt will be greater than their profit. They will go bankrupt. We'll see another whole group of companies, mainly commercial real estate, go bankrupt. So I believe that the real estate market is going to go down another 15 to 20%. I believe that with the exception of certain selected areas where there's more people who are wealthy and wanting to be than there are available real estate, and those will stay the same or go up. But for the average person, I believe that you had better pay attention because our economy is going over a cliff in the next 24 months. Hope I'm wrong. Thanks for your call.
Okay.
I'm Gary Noll, and I want to thank all of you for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.